The country is ripe and ready for development, and on behalf of an international consortium, of which Boss is the leading member, I have negotiated the concession to undertake a major part of this development. Doesn't sound as though you need me, then. I wish it were as easy as that, Harrison shook his head. We are being overtaken by the wave of hysteria that is sweeping the world. It is a psychological law that every mass popular movement is hijacked by fanatics and pushed beyond the dictates of reason and common sense. The pendulum of public feeling always swings too far in each direction. You're running into opposition to your plans to develop the natural resources of Ubomo. Is that what you're trying to tell me, Tug? Harrison cocked his head on one side. He looked like an eagle when he did that, a great bald-headed bird of prey. You are direct, young man, but I should have expected that. He sat down behind his desk and picked up an ivory-handled dueling pistol, which he used as a paperweight. He spun it on his forefinger, and the gold inlay on the barrel sparkled like a Catherine wheel. There was a female scientist working in Ubomo during Omeru's presidency, he went on at last. She and the old man had a close relationship, and he gave her all sorts of special privileges that he denied other journalists and researchers. She published a book on the forest dwellers of Ubomo. You and I would call them pygmies, although that term is unfashionable in today's climate. The title was... Harrison paused to think, and Daniel intervened. The title was The People of the Tall Trees. Yes, I've read the book. The author's name is Kelly Kinnear. Have you met her? Harrison demanded. No, Daniel shook his head. But I'd like to. She writes well. Her style reminds me of Rachel Carson. She is a troublemaker, Harrison cut in bluntly. She is a shit-stirrer. The coarse term seemed uncharacteristic of him. You'll have to explain that to me. Daniel kept his voice even and his expression neutral. He didn't want to declare his sentiments until he had heard Harrison out. When he came to power, President Tafari sent for this woman. She was working in the forest at the time. He explained to her his plans for the advancement and development of the country and asked for her support and her assistance. The meeting was not a success. Kelly Kinnear had some misguided sense of loyalty to old President Omeru, and she resisted President Tafari's overtures of friendship. She is entitled to her views, of course, but then she began a campaign of agitation within Ubomo's borders. She accused Tafari of violations of human rights. She also accused him of planning to rape the country's natural resources by uncontrolled exploitation. Harrison threw up those powerful, scarred hands. In fact, she went into female hysterics and attacked the new government in every way she was able. There was no logic, nor reason, nor even factual basis for these attacks. Tafari had no alternative but to send her packing. He chucked her out of Ubomo. She is, as you probably know, a British subject, and she ended up back here in the UK. However, she had not learned her lesson, and she continues her campaign against the government of Ubomo. Boss has nothing to fear from someone like that, surely, Daniel probed gently. And Harrison looked across at him sharply, searching for traces of irony in the question. Then he transferred his attention back to the dueling pistol in his right hand. Unfortunately, the woman has built up a foundation of influence on the strength of her writings. She is articulate and, he hesitated, and personable. She manages to hide her fanaticism under a cloak of reasoned logic, which is, needless to say, based on false assumptions and distorted facts. She has managed to recruit the support of the Green Party in this country and on the continent. You're right, Boss has nothing to fear from such an obvious charlatan. But she's a nuisance. She looks good on television. Now she has come to know of our interest in Ubomo and the plans that our consortium has to develop the area. She and her supporters are making a great deal of noise. You might have seen that piece in The Guardian recently. No, Daniel shook his head. I don't read The Guardian, and I've been pretty busy recently. I'm a little out of touch. Well, take my word for it, then. It is making life just a trifle uncomfortable for me. I have shareholders to answer to, and an annual general meeting coming up. Now, I've just learned that this woman has acquired a small block of shares in Boss, which gives her the right to attend the AGM and to speak. You can be certain she will have the radical press and a bunch of those lunatics from Friends of the Earth there with her, and she will make a circus of the occasion. Awkward, Tug, Daniel nodded, stifling his smile. How can I help you? Your influence in public and scientific circles is far greater than Kelly Kinnear's. I've spoken to many people in various disciplines and diverse walks of life about you. You are well respected. Your views on Africa are taken seriously. What I propose is that you go to Ubomo and make a documentary that sets out the true facts and examines the issues that this Kinnear woman has raised. It would blow her away like a puff of smoke. Television is a much more powerful medium than the printed word, and I could guarantee you maximum exposure. Boss owns extensive media interests, Daniel listened to him with rising incredulity. It was like listening to a client propositioning a prostitute for the performance of a particularly lurid perversion. He felt the urge to laugh with outrage, to reject violently this insult to his integrity. This man truly believed that he was for sale. It took an effort for him to sit still and listen expressionlessly. Of course, I could also guarantee that you would receive the wholehearted cooperation of President Tafari and his government. They would provide everything that you require. You need only ask, and there would be military transport, helicopters, lake patrol boats at your disposal. You could go anywhere, even into the closed area of the forest reservations. You could speak to anybody. To political prisoners? Daniel could not help himself. It slipped out. Political prisoners? Harrison repeated. What the hell would you want to speak to politicals for? This will be a documentary on the environment and the development of a backward society. Just suppose I did want to talk to political detainees, Daniel insisted. Look here, young man. Tafari is a progressive leader, one of the few honest and committed leaders on the continent. I don't think he's holding any political prisoners. It isn't his style. Well, what happened to Omeru? Daniel asked, leaning forward intently. And Harrison laid the dueling pistol on the blotter in front of him. Its barrels were pointing at Daniel's chest. Do I detect hostility towards the Ubomo government? He asked softly. Towards my proposition? No, Daniel denied it. I just have to know what I'm getting myself into. I'm a businessman like you, Tug. I want the hard facts, not the hard sell. You understand that. I'm sure you want the same if you were in my position. If I'm going to put my name to something, I must know what it is. Yes, all right. Harrison relaxed. He understood that explanation. Omeru was an obstinate old man. Tafari had no option but to hold him incommunicado during the transition period. He was under house arrest, being treated well. He had access to his lawyers and his doctor when he died of a heart attack. Tafari has not announced his death yet. It would seem to point to undesirable directions. Like summary execution without trial, Daniel suggested. He felt a pang of mourning for the old president. Yes, it might look like that, Harrison agreed, although I am assured by Tafari, and I have every reason to believe him, that it was not the case. All right, I accept your assurance on that point, Daniel said. Now, what about the costs of this production? It wouldn't be cheap. Off the top of my head, I would estimate the cost at a couple of million. I take it that you would want a first-rate job. Who pays for that? Boss? That would be a little obvious, Harrison demurred. It would reduce the stature of your production to a simple piece of company propaganda. No, I would arrange outside finance. The money would come through a Far Eastern company. Although it is a member of the consortium, it is not openly associated with Boss at this stage. They own a film company in Hong Kong, which we could use as a front. And what is the name of the parent company, and where is it based? Daniel asked. He felt the first tiny premonition, the sense of predestination that had disturbed him before. The parent company is Taiwanese, not well known, but very rich, very powerful, first-class people to deal with, I assure you, but of course I would personally underwrite any contract that you have with them. And what is the company's name? It's a rather flamboyant name, but typically Chinese. It's called the Lucky Dragon Company. Daniel stared at him, unable to speak for a moment. In some strange fashion, Ning Cheng Gong's destiny had been linked with his by the murder of Johnny Inzu. He knew that it had to be played out to the very end. Is something worrying you, Danny? Harrison looked concerned, and Daniel realized that he had allowed his agitation to show. No, I was just considering your proposal. On principle, I accept the assignment. He took a grip on himself. Subject to contract, of course. There'd be many items to negotiate. I would want a percentage of the total gross, an agreed advertising budget, choice of my own crew, especially the cameraman, and I'd want final cut. I'm sure we'll be able to come together on the details, Harrison smiled, and with one finger rotated the dueling pistol until the barrels were no longer pointed at Daniel's chest. Ask your agent to call me as soon as she can. And now I think the sun is definitely over the yardarm. We can drink to our arrangement in something a little more substantial than Darjeeling. Look here, Bonnie, it'd be much easier if you had an agent, Daniel told her seriously. I don't enjoy haggling with you. I believe an artist's job is to be creative, not to waste talent examining the fine print in a contract. You've been honest with me. I'll be frank with you, Danny. I don't like shelling out 20% of my hard-earned guilt to a middleman. Besides which, I don't agree with you. Writing a contract of employment can be as creatively satisfying as painting a picture or setting up a camera angle. She kicked off her shoes. Her bare feet were strong and shapely as her hands. She twisted her long denim-clad legs under her and settled back on his buttoned leather sofa. Let's talk business.
Okay.
Let's do it, he capitulated. On principle, I won't pay a crew by the hour, and I don't recognise overtime. We work whenever there is work to do and for as long as it takes. We go wherever I say, and we live off the land. No five-star accommodation.
That sounds to me like $2,000 a week, she said sweetly.
Dollars?
This isn't New York, Brother Dan, it's London.
Pounds. That's stiff. I don't get anywhere near that myself, he protested.
No, but you probably get 20% of the gross, whereas I will have to be content with a lousy 5%.
5% of the gross on top of 2,000 a week? Daniel looked horrified. You have to be joking.
If I were joking, I'd be smiling, wouldn't I?
I've never given a cut to a cameraman, forgive me, a camera person before.
Once you get used to the idea, you won't find it unbearably painful.
I tell you what, let's call it 1,200 a week and forget about any percentage.
Oh, the acoustics are terrible in here. I can't believe what I thought I just heard. I mean, you wouldn't want to insult me, would you, Danny boy?
Would you do me a favour, Miss Moon? Would you do up the top button of your shirt while we talk? The upper part of her chest was freckled like her face. It showed in the deep V of her open neck, but below a clear line where the sun had not stained it. Her skin was as white as buttermilk. Under the thin cotton shirt, her breasts, unfettered by any brassiere, were tight and firm. She glanced down into her deep cleavage.
Is there something wrong with them? She grinned slyly.
No, nothing at all. That's what I'm complaining about. She closed the button.
Did I hear you say 17.50 and 4%? She asked.
You're right, there is something wrong with the acoustics, he agreed. I said 1,500 and 1.5%.
2%,
she wheedled him. And when he sighed and agreed, she added craftily, and 100 a day location allowance. It took them almost 3 hours to hammer out the terms of her employment, and at the end he found his liking for her tempered by respect. She was a hard lassie.
Do we need a letter of intent? He asked. Or will a handshake do?
A handshake will do fine, she answered, as long as I have a letter of intent to back it up. He went through to his office and tapped out a draft of their agreement on his word processor and called her through to check the text on the screen. She stood behind him and leaned over his shoulder to read it. One of her breasts pressed taut and weightily on his shoulder. It was warm as a tama melon that had lain in the desert under the Kalahari sun.
You didn't put in the bit about first-class air tickets, she pointed out, and the salary to commence from date of signature.
The smell of her skin that he had noticed on their first meeting was more pronounced. He inhaled it with pleasure. It reminded him forcefully that he had been celibate for almost a year.
Good boy, she complimented him as he made the alteration she requested. That will do very nicely indeed.
The timbre of her voice had altered. It was softer and more resonant. There was also a subtle change in the odour of her body as well. He recognised the heady musk of female arousal. She was pumping the air full of pheromones, which put his own hormones on red alert. He was having difficulty concentrating as he ran off 4 copies of the agreement, one for each of them and another each for Elner and Boss's legal department. Bonnie reached over him to sign all 4 copies, and now she pressed herself against his back and her breath was hot on his cheek. She handed the pen to him, and he signed below her.
Handshake? He asked, and offered his open right hand. She ignored it, and instead reached over his shoulder and unbuttoned his shirt. She ran her hand down inside it.
I can think of something more binding than a plain little old handshake, she whispered, and pinched his nipple between her fingernails. He gasped. It
was more pleasure than pain. Danny boy, you and I are going to be alone in the jungle for 6 months or so, and I am a girl of healthy appetites. It's going to happen, sooner or later. It might as well be sooner. It would be hell if we waited until we got out there and then found that we didn't like it. Don't you agree? Your logic is irrefutable. He laughed, but it was shaky and rough. She took a pinch of his chest curls and used it as a goad to force him to his feet. Where's the bedroom? We might as well be comfortable. Follow me. He took her by the hand and led her to the door. Standing in the centre of the bedroom floor, she stepped back when he tried to embrace her. No, she said, don't touch me, not yet. I want to draw it out until it's unbearable. She stood facing him, an arm's length between them. Do what I do, she ordered, and began to unbutton her shirt. Her nipples were tiny, like miniature rosebuds carved from pale pink coral. You're as hairy and muscular as a grizzly bear. It gives me goosebumps, she said. And he saw her nipples rise into rosy points. The colour darkened and the skin surrounding them puckered. His own flesh responded even more dramatically, and she stared at him shamelessly and chuckled as she unbuckled her own belt. Her jeans were tight, and she wriggled and squirmed to get them down. Exodus, he said, chapter 3. That's not original, she glanced down at herself complacently. I've had the quotation applied to myself before. The burning bush. She combed her fingernails lingeringly through the thick mop of flaming curls at the base of her flat white belly. It was so crisp and dense that it rustled. It was one of the most excruciatingly erotic gestures he had ever watched. Come on, she encouraged him. You're falling behind. He dropped his own trousers around his ankles. Who have we here? She studied him frankly, standing to attention and positively aching to sacrifice himself in the burning bush. And she reached out to capture him expertly. Come along, my little mannequin, she murmured throatily, grinning that sly tomboy grin, and led him to bed.